Hey, this is James from TravelPunk.com.
And this is Mike.
Mike, how are you doing this week?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. It's been a long week so far.
Anything interesting happen?
No, it's just Monday.
Oh, I mean this past week. I don't think we recorded Survival Punk this past week.
Well, I got a tattoo.
Oh, that's right. You got your lifelong like love affair of Rubik's Cubes tattooed on your arm?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it a lifelong rub affair. Rubber affair.
Are you Chinese now?
I'm turning Japanese. I really think so.
Oh, yeah.
No, I did get a Rubik's Cube tattoo
awesome.
On my arm. It was my first. I broke my virginity.
Popped your tattoo cherry.
Exactly.
Looks awesome.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it. I'm psyched. And I was just talking to my wife about it earlier. And I was telling her a couple of days ago, I'm like, my next tattoo is going to be this, this, and this. And
the tattoo bug got you.
And yeah, and then I realized, oh my God, today I realized I've only had this damn thing for 9 days.
Yeah.
And I'm already talking about the next one. It just stopped hurting.
Yeah.
It was horrible. I'm a wimp when it comes to pain.
Yeah.
Oh. But let's see, what do we got lined up on the show for this week? Going to be hearing from our old friends over at JM Bullions and Black River Outpost and Survival Gear Bags. Going to be talking about the reminders that an earthquake can bring to mind or whatever. I'm a little off today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We're going to be talking about who is your preparedness buddy. Going to have Mike's movie pick, the survival movie pick of the week. Going to be concluding our series on Prepping 101. Going to be talking about fast fat and eating bugs over Nutrition Corner today. Our survival gadget of the week, my celebrity invite, and why don't we just take it away? This first card on our little board here seems interesting.
Right, so I've been CrossFitting for a while, and I did a little experiment the past couple days this past week. And I think the experiment, which we'll talk about later on in Nutrition Corner, may have had some negative effects on me.
Really?
So this morning, I showed up to CrossFit for the first time since I think Tuesday or Wednesday of last week.
Uh-huh.
Because I got a little back injury going on, so I took a couple days off.
Oh, what happened to your back?
Well, just the last CrossFit open workout.
Just stomped you?
Yeah, it was heavy deadlifts, and I tweaked my back, so I took a couple days off.
Mm.
I didn't want to mess with a back injury.
Now, how much were you heavy deadlifting?
225. So heavy for me.
That's more than you weigh.
It is more than I weigh. And I got 12 repetitions at two. So it started out at, I think I did one something. And I worked my way up from 150 to 180 to 225 pounds. So it was multiple repetitions of all those weights.
Oh, good God.
And the last couple ones, like I just, my form fell to crap, and I just feel my back tweaking, and I was too amped up to keep going. So this morning, like, I showed up, and I thought I felt pretty good, and then as the workout started going, like, I just felt myself falling to pieces. Like, on the run, like, my stomach got sort of churning, and everything started trying to come up.
Uh-huh.
And I felt just weak and just tired and just lightheaded, like I was seeing spots.
Really?
And I had to stop in the middle of the workout to go to the bathroom and just throw up my breakfast. Like, I just lost everything, like total tummy evacuation.
Now, is this your first time doing that since CrossFitting?
Second time throwing up.
Oh, really?
In CrossFit. The very first day I went, I got a little sick and threw up. And
so this is your first time since the first time?
Yes, this is my first time since the first time. Wow. And, yeah, I think between talking to the other people there that I was just crushed from being so low carb and the high demand of the workout.
You do need some carbs when working out.
Yeah. And my body has changed so much since when I started CrossFitting,
mm-hmm.
that what was working isn't really working now.
Well, that ain't good.
So that combined with the experiment I did last week, I'm going to start eating like sweet potato before I go work out or something.
A sweet potato?
Yeah, a little sweet potato, get a little carbs in. So, yeah.
Why a sweet potato?
They're better than white potatoes and they're good starch.
You know what else likes sweet potatoes?
What?
Kangaroos.
I like kangaroos. I want to get some kangaroo meat.
Went to the zoo the other day, and they were giving the kangaroo sweet potatoes as a treat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, they're liking it. Most difficult kangaroo they had there was just like a sucker for the sweet potatoes.
Yum. All right, so next up, we've got sponsor of the day, number one, JMBullion.com.
Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about JM Bullion and the fine service they provide.
JM Bullion, you can go there for the best prices online to get your gold and silver coin needs with impeccable customer service. If anything happens, especially like on the fault of the postal service, they will make it right and you will be a happy customer.
That is awesome. That's not something you'd expect out of a gold and silver.
Yeah, they're good about taking care of their people.
I am off my game today.
You are off.
I am forgetting words left and right, but where can you find JM Bullion?
You can go to jmbullion.com or head to survivalpunk.com and click on the banner ad on the right-hand side as always.
Awesome. Now let's move right into our news story today. It's not much news to find out that, you know, California's had earthquakes, but you're wanting to talk about it anyway. I mean,
yeah, apparently, and this article was posted on 3/17, so St. Patrick's Day. There was an earthquake the Monday of that week in Southern California. And it reminds Southern Californians to get their preparedness kits ready. So jumping into the article here. This is a reminder that we live in an earthquake country here in Southern California, said Robert Graves, geologist at the U.S. Geological Survey. With an earthquake fresh in everyone's mind, the American Red Cross Los Angeles region reposted the outline for an ideal preparedness kit, which should be equipped for 3 to 7 business days and contain at least 26 items from no-brainers such as water, a gallon per person per day, and a flashlight to less thought of items such as bleach, copies of personal documents, and entertainment items to pass the time. So, yeah, it's good that hopefully some of the Californians take heed to this. In an area that's so prone to natural disasters, there's no reason why everyone should not have a bug-out bag.
Yeah, you'd think everybody in California at this point would be a survival expert.
Right.
I mean, they get earthquakes. They get floods out there? I know they get a lot of wildfires.
They get floods. I don't think they get floods. But they get wildfires, mudslides, earthquakes, droughts.
Yeah.
So storing water backup is, and especially in an area that's prone to droughts.
Oh, yeah, California's that's a rough state to live in. I mean, they've got a fault line running almost the entire length of the state.
It has its pluses and benefits. You're able to grow crops there year-round.
That is true.
Including, like, tropical species, lemons and oranges and bananas. Maybe bananas, maybe. I don't know if you can grow bananas in the United States without a greenhouse.
When I was your age, this was all orange groves, as the eye could see.
So, yeah, I mean, it's hopefully... Even if you're not going to go to the level that most survivalists go and build a good quality bug-out bag, you know, like you've upgraded your bug-out bag since I gave it to you.
Oh, yeah. Any chance I get to upgrade that thing.
Right. Even if you're not going to do that, there's a lot of reputable companies, ready-made resources, that sell some pre-made bug-out bags that just buy one for, you know, $50, throw it in your closet, and don't worry about it.
Absolutely.
At least having that level is better than the average schmo that doesn't have anything.
Oh, yeah. It's always good to have some kind of a kit for any kind of emergency. I mean, for your car, for your home, for pretty much anything. I've got my pocket survival tin.
Right.
I've got my bug out bag. I've even got, you know, the emergency roadside kit in the car. I mean, there is no such thing as being too prepared.
There is no such thing, no.
No, and that's something that most Americans need to learn. And speaking of being prepared and Americans, I think it's time we move on and talk about, well, let me ask you something, James. Who is your preparedness buddy?
That's an interesting topic. That's the next thing we have here. I actually tried to build a prepper group here, which kind of fell apart, kind of, sort of. So the next article is, who is your preparedness buddy? And it is at, because I forgot to mention the last article, some unpronounceable Utah.
stgeorgeutah.com.
Yeah, as always, links will be in the show notes. Let's see.
When a disaster happens, senior citizens, people with disabilities, and those living alone can be especially vulnerable. The Southwest Utah Public Health Department is addressing this issue by promoting Utah's big on preparedness. Like Salt Lake City, they're huge on it, the Mormons and everything. By promoting the preparedness buddy concept, which simply connects those people with trusted neighbors, friends, or family members who agree to check on them in an emergency situation. We have – you want to go ahead and take the second paragraph?
Yeah, we have a lot of people in the category living in our district, the department's emergency preparedness and response director, Paulette Valentine, said. They will fare much better in a disaster if they're already arranged to have someone follow up to make sure they're all right. This includes knowing what essential medications and medical equipment they use, especially if there's an evacuation. The Preparedness Buddy Plan calls for an individual too. Identify someone they trust who would check on them in an emergency. Contact the person to make sure they agree. Discuss and write down specific concerns and needs with the buddy. And make sure both keep the information on hand. A pamphlet with these steps and additional preparedness information is available at www.swuhealth.org.
Excellent. I don't know that necessarily I feel that the government should get involved in this, but I do like the idea of a preparedness buddy.
Well, I mean, it's nice they're trying to do something at least for the people.
Right. I mean, if you're a decent person, you should – I mean, I recommend to my listeners here that, you know, in your neighborhood, you know you have an elderly couple or an elderly person there. Check on them during a disaster, you know? Absolutely. Get to know them.
You know, a few years back when the big floods hit Tennessee.
Yeah.
That one big weekend. I mean, we were...
I was camping that weekend.
Yeah, I mean, there was quite a bit of people that were completely unprepared for that.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember hearing this one story, these people in West Nashville, this elderly couple, they were both in their 80s, possibly 90s. They didn't have anybody other than each other.
Right.
After the water subsided, the FEMA, the rescue people, they came in. They found this old couple dead in each other's arms.
Oh, it's terrible.
They had nobody to help them. They were not prepared at all. They were elderly. One was in a wheelchair. One was in a walker. And so they just sat down, held each other, and died.
Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, with something like this in play, there could have been somebody there to check on them, to pull them, to get them out of that house. They could have, I mean, they were already old, but they could have lived another good few years.
Easily, yeah. Yeah, so it's a neat concept, and I would say to implement it in your areas. Check on your disabled and elderly people and make sure they're okay.
And you don't have to get your local government involved or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, people organize stuff like a neighborhood watch all the time. Why don't just organize something like this. Add this to that sort of thing. I mean, like I said before, you can never possibly be too prepared, and many hands make light work.
Yes. Yes. All right. Moving along.
Oh, let's see. It looks like it is time for, my survival movie pick of the week.
What do you got this week?
Well, this week I actually... I thought outside the box and actually got a survival movie this time.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I know. That Down Periscope, I know you love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and did I ever use Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, yeah, that's not a knife. But anyway, my survival movie pick of this week is Robinson Crusoe, starring Pierce Brosnan. Now, this is a movie based off the book that was based off the journal of Robinson Crusoe. So it's several times removed from actual events.
Right.
But, you know, they tried to stay pretty true to the story, is my imagining. It's basically about a man who, he winds up killing his best friend in a duel. A duel over the love of a woman. Robinson's loved this woman since they were children, but she was betrothed to his best friend. As you could tell, this is not set in modern times.
Right.
No, but he's
frowned upon for killing your friend to hook up with his wife or betrothed.
Right. So basically, I mean, this wasn't, he wasn't at risk of, you know, being thrown into prison, but a lot of bad things could have happened for him. So he decided, they made an agreement, he would take off for a year until everything died down. Well, unfortunately, while he was gone for that year, sailing around the world, well, he got shipwrecked. Everybody on board the boat died except for him and the captain's dog, Skipper. It was a short, stubby-legged little thing in the movie. I loved it. It was just, I think it was a corgi, maybe.
I hate corgis.
But, you know, he's stuck on this island, and first thing he does, he takes inventory of what he's got. He goes back into the ruins of the ship, finds all the ammo, finds all the food, anything that he might be able to help him.
Right.
And then he basically, he sets to work building a home for himself, because, well, first thing he does, actually, is wait to get rescued, which is what a lot of, you know, that's one of the choices that you got to make in a survival situation. Either, basically, either help yourself or wait to get rescued.
Right.
At first, he was waiting to get rescued, and he had a near miss. A boat came really close to the island, and he lit his signal fire way too late. They sailed away round the bluffs, never even saw him. He kind of has a mini breakdown and decides, that's it. I'm going to be here. God only knows how long. I've got to. This is my new home for however long it's going to be. And basically starts building himself. I would want to say it looks like a small village, but it's, you know, it's his home with everything he needs. And natives all wind up coming onto the island from another neighboring island. They're about to sacrifice. They're doing a human sacrifice of some of their enemies.
Oh, fun.
And this one, and Robinson sees that they're just killing these people for no good reason. They're being sacrificed. So he intervenes from a distance and saves the life of one of them. And over time, they form a tentative friendship. They actually become best friends. It takes a while. It takes some, they have trust issues. And plus, they don't speak the same language. Right. Robinson eventually teaches him English and names him Friday, man Friday.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't want to ruin the whole movie. I mean,
because I haven't seen it. I actually want to. It's...
Oh, it is an awesome movie. It really is. I mean, and it has everything. It's got funny moments. It's got adventure. I mean, it's got some tear-jerking moments, too. I mean, but basically it shows, and I probably sound like a broken record saying it shows the true, it's a true testimony to the human spirit, because I think I've said that so many times already, but it really is. So, Robinson Crusoe, starring Pierce Brosnan, go out, find it, rent it, buy it, bootleg it, just watch it.
So how'd you see it? How'd you see it? What was it on?
Oh, it was on, Fetnix.
What?
Fetnix.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. Fetnix. They're not paying me to say their name, so I'm not going to say their name.
Is it on Netflix? Because I have that and I'll watch it if it's on there.
Yes, it's on Netflix.
Okay. Thanks.
Jerk.
Alrighty.
Okay. Moving along to people that actually are paying us to say their names.
Right.
It's time to pay a tribute to our friends over at Black River Outpost.
Yes, Black River Outpost. For all your tactical and prepping needs, head over to Black River Outpost, where they've got some amazing deals.
Is their spring sale still going on, or is that over?
I would imagine it's over, but let's see what they got going on. Let's live head by the website and see.
And what is that website?
BlackRiverOutpost.com.
Let's see what kind of deals they got going on here.
Featured products... Adventure Medical Quick Clot Sport 25-gram coagulate, $10.95. Not bad.
Looks like we got the Chinook Trekker Series snowshoes. See, only $52.95, and these are some high-quality
probably
snowshoes.
On clearance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, looks like we've got the Galati Gear Tactical Vest. It's a right-handed version. It was $69.95, currently marked down to $49.95, a savings of $20 on that. So head on over to BlackRiverOutpost.com. Bug out with your big bargains.
I'll check out that mil-spec paracord belt for $24.95.
Not bad.
I'm sure that's a ton of paracord in a belt.
Wow, that's made entirely of paracord?
That is made, plus the belt buckle. All right, Black River Outpost. Stop by and tell them Survival Punk sent you.
BlackRiverOutpost.com. Okay, it's time for our the concluding chapter of our Prepping 101 series.
Yes.
This week we're going to talk about protection.
Protection. So as soon as we said that, you immediately jumped to AR-15s and tactical rifles. I'm sure everyone did. Which, I own those things, and they are fun. We've shot in Mike's backyard many a times.
Best defense is good offense.
We'll probably do that again in the near future.
After we clean up the mess we left down there last time.
Right, right. Our friend Gabriel is wanting to bring his new shiny AK out again. And
yeah, he's cleaning up most of that mess.
Yeah.
He's the one that drugged the TV in the sink over there.
So. Right. So before I tell you to go out there and load up on, several thousand dollars worth of guns like what I have now.
And before we advise shooting in your backyard, I live in the woods. I live pretty much in the woods.
Right. Before you do any of this, I suggest you go out and get training on these weapons. When I first started shooting guns, I did not have training, and I was not good at it. I was not safe, and I should not have been shooting guns in Mike's backyard. I tore up my thumb one time.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was terrible. After that, I got wise, and I actually went and got training a few times. The great people over at Condition1.com, they're a firearms training company. They're real good. They do some great training. Some other places here in around the Middle Tennessee area I got training from. And now I'm a pretty accurate, pretty decent shot with both a handgun and a rifle.
And you're a relatively good amateur instructor. I mean, you're not good enough to run your own school, but you actually helped my wife get a lot better at shooting a pistol.
Right, right. I mean, just sort of teaching and telling what I've gone through and then what I've learned from Justin over at Condition One and the other fine people over there.
Now, do you have a good tip for somebody who's trying to get a little bit better at using a handgun?
I would say, and it's kind of hard to explain this without being over there to show you, I would say the big ones is you want to form an isosceles triangle with your shooting stance, sort of legs, you know, shoulder width apart, put a bend in your knees, lean forward, don't lean away when you're shooting. I like the method of when I cup the weapon with my hands, I like my thumbs to point downrange together.
Mm-hmm.
I know your friend Todd prefers the hand claps on the bottom, which has never given me very good control, and I don't care for it.
Hey, well, whatever it's like works. I always say, whatever works.
Right, right. I found that learning and teaching the thumbs down range works better for more people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you shoot enough, you decide what works for you. But to jump in feet first, thumbs down range.
Right.
Another tip that I've been told is to put your nose over your toes. So when you're leaning forward and you got your knees bent, get your body leaned out there forward and press the gun out.
I've never heard that one before.
Nose over toes.
Hmm. I probably haven't, just forgotten. I used to watch the show Top Shot all the time.
Oh, yeah. Sure they would have said it.
Oh, yeah. I think they did, actually.
Yeah. No. And a trick that I came across reading some tips on the internet that really helped me out was I used to not put the gun into death grip. Now when I'm shooting, I'll squeeze until it's about like at the muscle like shaking point and then back off just slightly. And that gives me more control.
Seems like that would give somebody less control.
No, because when you're not holding that tight, the gun can sort of move around. This way, it's not going to go anywhere. I mean, even if you practice, like, squeezing so hard your arm does shake,
mm-hmm.
You know, and this is where you're using a handgun for self-defense, it's still going to be close enough that you're going to take someone out. You know, whether you hit there, or there on someone's, like, chest, it's still going to be enough to finish it.
I'd imagine, yeah.
Right.
Now, I mean, there's got to be more to protection than just shooting things, though.
Right. So, carrying things, and I'm bad about this, but I don't have a lot of pocket space. I would recommend that you do carry a pepper spray on you, especially if you're going to carry a firearm, so you have a less than lethal option to utilize.
Right.
I mean, my pockets are so filled with stuff, I really do need to find a slimmer version of a pepper spray so I can carry on myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely recommend pepper spray. Some people swear by tasers and stun guns.
They don't work on a lot of people. I happen to know one guy that you could shock him for a good 5 minutes with a stun gun and he'd just stand there smiling at you.
Well, that's another thing. A lot of the stun guns you can get on the civilian market without like, you know, law enforcement officers can buy, even for their off use, law enforcement military can get better quality tasers and stun guns than us normal people can. So the ones that we can get, like at the gun show, I've been electrocuted. That's the person you're talking about. I've been electrocuted to the point where I'm just like
cooking your arm.
You're just cooking my arm. I'm not even, you know, in a fight, it wouldn't even faze me. I'd have just choked you out.
Although one time I did see the inside of a disposable camera take you out for a good few seconds.
Those things are tough. For an impromptu, like a stun gun, the charge capacitor and a disposable camera are pretty strong.
I thought you were faking. I saw you shake and grin, and then you slump down on the couch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, James? Oh, God. He just shocked himself. He's right. Unconscious. His eyes are open, but he's unconscious.
Yeah. Before we get back into firearms, considering a martial art would not be a bad option there.
Any kind of combat training like that would probably be a good idea.
Right, right. I mean, as far as that goes, any sort of martial art would probably be preferable. Doing a mixed martial arts or a Krav Maga would probably be best for like a street fight situation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a black belt in Taekwondo, you're probably going to be good enough to take out most people that would try to harm you.
I would recommend one thing. I mean, unless you're really, really good at roundhouse kicks, I wouldn't just throw them in at any time.
No. Unless you're Van Damme.
Or Chuck Norris.
Right. So, before you should implement all of these things, and this is where I probably should have started out at, so let's backtrack, and let's mention real quick...
yeah, we got to climb back
situational
up the rabbit
awareness.
Hole, you know?
So I'm big on situational awareness. I've always been big on situational awareness, even before I knew what it was and all the philosophies along with it. So the best way not to be in a situation that need personal defense is to not put yourself in those situations. Firearms instructor Frank Sharp Jr. has a saying that I love. I love the saying. Don't go to stupid places with stupid people and do stupid shit. That's the way to get yourself in trouble there.
Yeah, that's automatically a way to avoid a lot of stuff.
Right there. Right. Don't associate with idiots. And I have done all three of those things in the past, and it always gets you. And if it doesn't, you're lucky. You're like, ah, that was almost a bad situation I got in there.
I've seen you go to do stupid things with stupid people, go into stupid places before, usually because I'm there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I need to wear the shirt I'm with stupid when I'm with you?
Well, it would match the one that I wear with when I'm with your mom.
Right. So, yeah, situational awareness. And when you go to those places, be aware of your surroundings. I've noticed so many times, like, I'll be in a store, and people will be oblivious to their surroundings, and they'll almost walk into people and stuff. And it's just like, whenever I'm anywhere... I'm aware of the people around me and then what's going on. I have a tendency of every time I go to a restaurant, I'll pick a spot where I could see the entrance to the place. So in case some maniac comes in with a shotgun, I see him come in. You know, it's just little things like that, like being aware of your surroundings, you know, and just not being in like a stupor. You know, pay attention to things when you're out. So, yeah, those are a couple little tricks. I've wrote extensively on situational awareness. And to follow that up would be the gray man theory.
What's the gray man theory?
Basically, it's trying to blend into a crowd. So, you know, whenever you go through a crowd, there's certain people that immediately pop out. And you notice those people, like... Oh, hey, that girl has a blue mohawk. You notice her.
Right.
You know, oh, that guy looks like the Unabomber with his sunglasses and cap and his hoodie over it, and he's, like, sneaking around and lurking and stuff. You know, there are certain people that you notice either because they're sort of extremes of normal of the normal populace.
Right.
You know, if you see a supermodel, you're like, you notice her. You know, if you see a guy like GQ'd up in like the pristine Armani suit, you kind of notice that.
Right.
But if you see people in like beat up tennis shoes, blue jeans, and like, you know, a normal, a gray hoodie, you don't notice them.
No, they just kind of blend in because there's a lot more of those than there are of the special people.
You don't even notice those people. So it's sort of preferable. I mean, I have a unique survival punky style.
Right.
But I try to sort of, at times, you know, be aware of that and not go over the board. I don't want to stand out in the crowd that much.
See, and I'm that way. I prefer to just blend into the shadows.
Exactly.
Essentially. I mean, most of my wardrobe is made up of t-shirts and jeans.
Right.
I don't have a lot of wardrobe choices that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now, I'm wearing blue jeans and I'm wearing, well, a gray hoodie.
A gray hoodie, yes.
I'm the kind of guy, and plus it doesn't, you know, it also helps that I'm about average height, dark hair, dark eyes,
right,
all that stuff. I mean, guys like us, there's like a million of us.
Right.
I always like to say God broke the mold, God forgot to break the mold after he made me.
Right. I've been told a million times by people, hey, you look just like this person I know.
Exactly. I get that all the time. Everybody knows somebody that looks like me.
Right. So, don't go to dumb places with dumb people and do stupid things. Try to be a gray man and blend into your surroundings. So, we want to cover protection, but we'd rather not have to use protection.
Right.
We'd rather just eliminate that whole thing. This is as long as society is operating smoothly and not in like a grid down collapse scenario, in which case, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I'd like to throw out another tip.
Okay.
Out there. If you're trying to blend in, if you're trying not to get noticed, and you're trying to avoid extraneous situations, one thing you can do or not do, as the case might be in a crowd, just don't make eye contact with anybody. Concentrate on where you're going. People will remember you if they lock eyes with you.
Yeah.
They will. I mean,
try to share sort of a connection there between the eyes.
Even if it's just for a half a second.
Yeah.
I mean, and plus they tell you like all the time, like, God only knows how many times on the Discovery Channel I've heard him say, never make eye contact with this wild animal. Never stare a gorilla in the eyes because it's a sign of aggression.
Right.
Guess what? Sometimes that does make it up the food chain.
Yeah.
That actually has made it up the evolutionary ladder. And some people, you ever heard the phrase, yeah, he'll knock the crap out if you look at him wrong?
It's true. Right.
It's true.
All right. So at some point, you are going to want to start thinking about getting firearms and getting training. I would say do a lot of research. If you have friends that have weapons, you know, get with them. Use a buddy system here. I've gotten with you and your wife and some other friends and, you know, brought my guns out and, you know, gave you guys quick lessons on how to shoot, safety. I always go over safety every single time. I don't care if you hear me say it a million times. I'll go over the rules of firearm safety every single time to make sure that you know it.
Now, I mean, and protecting yourself also encompasses protecting the various parts of yourself as well. Like, when you're out shooting, you're going to want to protect your ears.
Yeah.
Wear some good noise-canceling. Also wearing, like, protective eyewear and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, because when you're out target shooting, you never know, like, when something might ricochet, a piece of,
right,
you know, shrapnel off of whatever you just shot. Like, if you're out shooting beer bottles or something, a piece of glass could go flying.
Right.
Freaking wear.
Definitely want to think about the clothes you wear when you go shooting. Eye protection, ear protection. I usually wear a baseball cap. Get a little head protection in there. For the ladies, tank tops are not the best thing to wear. Hot brass down your shirt is never fun.
Oh, God, yeah, no, that can leave some very unfortunate scars in your bikini regions.
Right. So there's that. Like I said, you know, if you have a friend that can take you out and shoot, that's an excellent thing. If not, you can go to a gun range, or you can go to a gun store that has a range, like my friends at National Armory, and they have rentals that you could do to try on the different weapons you want to shoot. Like your, for example, your wife was asking about, you know, buying firearms, and my suggestion would be to go to an indoor firing range that has rentals like that. You know, National Armory, Ashton City just opened a gun store that does it. You know, and you know, for $20-$30, rent a couple guns. For her, I'd suggest 38 Special. That's a good caliber because she doesn't like a lot of recoil. A small 9. I want to pick up a Kel-Tec PF9, but I've heard it has a lot of recoil. So something like the Glock 19, what I use for my everyday carry, is not too bad on recoil. It has a good feel. It fits good in my hand. It conceals really well when I carry it. And I tried so hard to stay away from the Glock 19, because it's everybody's choice for a concealed carry weapon. And after concealed carrying it for a while, there's a reason for it. I've never had that thing jam on me.
Really?
Never. My previous handgun, Smith & Wesson Sigma S40 VE,
mm-hmm.
It jammed constantly. Like, every time I took it out, it would jam. I ended up selling it and buying a shotgun. Good purchase. I'm happy with it.
That's my weapon of choice.
Yeah, you like the shotgun.
Yeah, I can't hit the broadside of a barn with a handful of buckshot. So.
Yeah.
So, I'm with a shotgun. I like to consider myself a freaking surgeon with a shotgun, but then again, almost everybody is.
Right. So
they're a lot of fun.
And speaking of home protection, when you're getting into firearms, I would honestly suggest your first firearm purchase be a shotgun. You know, for the home protection, a shotgun's going to take care of most of your needs. You're not going to need to be an accurate shot with it.
No.
Aiming with it is good enough. If you point it at someone's chest and pull the trigger, it's going to be a bad day for them.
Yeah, it's possibly going to be a last day
for them. Yeah, they're possibly going to leave vertically and not horizontally. So,
you mean the other way around.
Yeah, sure. They're not going to be leaving walking.
They're not going to leave diagonally. They're going to leave perpendicularly.
Yes. You know, and you can get a brand new shotgun for relatively cheap. The one I bought, my Remington 870, was $240, I think.
Is that the one that I use every time we go shooting?
Right.
I love that gun.
That one. It was only like $240, brand new.
I look natural with that gun.
Yes.
That, and I want a pair of Match Desert Eagles with the silencer extensions on it.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, like in Boondock Saints, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course, they said those things are insanely heavy.
I've seen them for sale, and just a 50 caliber handgun's not something I really want to play with.
Nah.
I mean, play with maybe, but not carry.
But what do you think of revolvers? Do you own any revolvers?
I do not own a revolver. I've shot a few here and there. They are incredibly reliable. I mean, unlike a semi-automatic with a magazine, mm-hmm. they're really reliable. I don't like them I don't like them personally. Like, if you or ladies are going to carry, you know, a six-shot revolver for protection, I can understand that. I just happen to like, with my Glock 19, for example, I can carry 15 plus one in the chamber.
Right. You get more ammo with a pistol.
You get more ammo. A magazine, I have a carrier to carry two spare magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 30 extra bullets total. Unlike, you know, a revolver where you have your six shots, and then you can even get speed loaders for them, but it still is not nearly as fast as, you know, a semi-automatic magazine change.
I actually did see a revolver, and I don't know the name of it. I saw a revolver the other day that I desperately want. It shoots shotgun shells.
I think that was called the Judge.
I think you're right on that, because somebody at
L-Word. It's a 410. It shoots 45 or 410, usually interchangeably. It's like usually marked as a snake gun.
Well, whatever. All I could see is a revolver that shoots shotgun shells. That's awesome.
Right. Well,
that is just awesome.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. What are you doing with your phone, Tom?
Oh, I was just seeing why it's flashing at me. Okay. So, yeah, recommend you start with a shotgun for home protection. You can get a used one for like $100 or something. So, shotgun, my personal preference would be probably to follow that up by taking your concealed carry class and then getting a handgun. And that would carry, you know, your home protection and away protection.
Right.
My thoughts on carrying your firearm at home or anywhere is it needs to be on you.
Oh, absolutely.
If you have a handgun and you're at home, it needs to be in your concealed carry holster. Because for you have children at home. They're not going to be able to get that firearm off of your waist.
No, not at all.
If you have it in a safe in your room, then it's out of your eyesight, and that lends it sort of lends some like play in there that they could get their hands on it.
See, I've never liked the idea of the gun safe for one reason. I mean, it's the middle of the night. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. All of a sudden, a bump in the night, a broken window or whatever wakes you.
Right.
There's now a burglar in your house. You're groggy as crap, and you're having to put the combination in on something just so you can get your gun out.
Right.
When they could be in the room with you way before you ever actually got to the safe. I mean, the safe open.
I mean, for that, I don't have kids in my home, so I leave a loaded shotgun right next to my bed at all times.
Right.
It's going to be a terrible day for anyone that breaks into my place.
Now, one thing and another thing I want to say. I mean, if you're going to have a gun in your home for protection, you have a loaded gun in your home for protection. I've heard of people keeping, you know, the gun here and the bullets there, and I think that's right. Just stupid. Right.
I see what they're trying to do, and they're trying to, like, keep their children safe or whatever. But
have you ever tried to load a gun in the dark when your nerves are shot and you think your family's in mortal danger?
Yeah, you need to practice that insanely if you're going to do that. And even then, no, just don't do it. Just don't do it.
Now, one other thing that I will personally recommend as far as protections. Now, we've talked a lot about firearms and guns as weapons. Those aren't the only weapons out there. I personally have a lot of knives. I collect bladed weapons.
Yeah.
One good thing about them, you don't have to reload them. I mean, you pick it up and it's ready to use right then and right there. Could also be good if you're trying not to give away your position or anything. Say you're having to deal with more than one intruder.
Right.
Boom. You've already slit one dude's throat and nobody heard it happen.
Right. I'd rather have a firearm for protection.
I mean, yeah, of course, you'd rather have a firearm for you know, range weapons or whatever.
And plus for that, if I'm a burglar and I just hear a shotgun go off, I'm getting the hell out of there.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, it's been nice knowing you, buddy. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I mean, unless that burglar too has a gun or whatever.
They like the easy fruit though. Like I remember hearing a statistic that the majority of people in prison are more afraid of gun owners than they are the police.
And you know what's funny? There's more people afraid of dogs than they are of guns.
I mean, that would be another thing. Like I don't have a dog for, you know, protection, but that's another big thing to mention that, you know, having dogs for early warning. You guys have dogs, and you know if someone's in your driveway.
Oh, we have several dogs. We have one big dog that's ready to rip your throat out, and we have a bunch of what I like to call the alarm dogs.
Yeah, little yippers.
The ones that are nervous and will let you know and wake you up if they hear something that they think is not right.
Right.
They also help to warn the bigger dog, too. So, I mean, between those dogs and my bladed weapon collection, I feel pretty secure out here.
Yeah. I've heard of other people using the big, huge things of, like, pepper spray or, like, bear spray throughout their house. Someone tries to kick in your door, you know, you have one Velcro next to the door, and you just hit them with some bear spray in the face.
Oh, yeah. No, I keep at least 3 canisters of mace in this house at all times.
Excellent. Yeah, good for you. That's another thing that I just don't. I have loaded weapons throughout my house, but with no pepper spray. It's terrible. So, yeah, I think we've covered about the scope of protection for this episode. Protection by itself could be several episodes.
Right.
But I think absolutely. We've gone over the general survival punk philosophy of, you know, I think you should start with a shotgun after getting training and after going over safety, then a handgun, eventually, you know, for the zombie apocalypse, you should have a high-powered rifle, an AR-15.
Oh, absolutely.
An an AK-47, something like that. You know, after your basics,
crossbow.
You get, yeah, crossbow if you're Daryl. You get way into like specifics. You need a high-powered long-range rifle. You need this rifle. But your basics, grab a shotgun. Grab a handgun. Can't go wrong with Glock 19, and you should feel more safe at that point. You've got your basics covered.
Mm-hmm. Now I love the two shotguns that I own, but in a zombie apocalypse, they wouldn't be very. I mean, they would only be good at like up close.
Right.
I mean, from like 30 feet away, you're just gonna piss a zombie off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're already pissed off. They're just going to keep coming. I mean, eventually you'll get that good shot right in front of the chin, you know, blow the brains out the top of their head, but still.
Right. So what do we got up next?
And so just in summary, we both feel sorry for anybody that ever tries to break into our homes. Right. Okay, up next, it's time to talk about Nutrition Corner.
Ah.
Let's see. And first thing we got up in Nutrition Corner, we have a couple of topics this week. What is this Fat Fast?
So, I was getting a little impatient with the weight loss, which I don't know why I was. The scale wasn't moving. Clothes were dropping. You know, I was seeing that there was an obvious change in the mirror, but I got a little hung up on the whole scale number.
And let me guess, it's because you were losing fat and gaining muscle.
Yeah. I mean, you can look at me and tell that I've continued to lose weight. But that pesky scale wasn't moving, and it got in my head, and it got to me.
I mean, if you want to get technical, bodybuilders, according to the...
Are obese,
according to the height versus weight.
The BMI, yeah. So, and the head coach at my gym, Nick, he's like 240. So the first time I heard him on the phone was... Well, another story. First time I talked to him on the phone, he said he was like 240. I was like, oh, this guy's going to be chubby. And I get there, and he's like a 6 foot tall, 6 foot four, 6 foot five, like Tarzan behemoth of a man. And I was like, nope, not chubby.
Yeah, that extra 40 pounds you were worried about, it's 10 pounds in each pec, and God only knows how much distortion throughout his 6 foot.
Yeah, and I mean, on top of that, today in CrossFit, when I was talking about it, the coach there that was training today, Chrissy, she was like, you gotta not get like caught up on the numbers there. She was like, I got a picture, like a side-by-side picture of me when I was like 150. And it's like, both pictures are her at 150. One, she was like a fat little girl. Another, she was in a bikini ripped like a fitness model.
Hmm.
And I was like, there's no way this is the same girl. Like, and she was like, yeah, both of them are 150. But there's a big difference between 150 and fat and 150 and ripped and muscular. And I'm like, yeah. It was amazing. It was like night and day. I could barely even tell it was her in the fat picture. So anyway, I got a little caught up on it, and I decided to do an Atkins-invented trick called a Fat Fast to sort of kick the scale moving a little bit and drop a quick few pounds. So for 3 days at work, I did a Fat Fast, which was I limited myself to 1,000 calories a day of nothing but fat. So the morning started out with like 3 pieces of bacon, and then for the rest of the day, I either ate like 1 ounce of macadamia nuts at a time to equal up to 1,000 calories, or like, I think it was 2 ounces of cream cheese at a time. So yeah, that's basically like a little less, about one package of cream cheese a day was all I ate for 3 days.
Good God.
And, you know, it wasn't terrible. Like, you're not super duper hungry. You know, I got kind of tired of the cream cheese, so I don't think I ate all of the cream cheese, so I probably didn't even hit the 1,000 calories I was supposed to hit.
Yeah, you can burn yourself out on pretty much anything if you eat enough of it.
Yeah. And I just, I think I may have lost a few pounds doing this, but by Sunday, the fourth day, I was hungry, and I was like, I'm done with this. I ate a real breakfast, and then I kind of ate throughout the day. And then I think that, doing that fat fast may have been one of the reasons why CrossFit crushed me today so bad. Just being like no carb, high fat, like in that fasting, like 1,000 calories a day for so many days, I was just depleted. I had nothing in the tank.
I can imagine, dude.
Yeah. And then it really seems
like, yeah, it really seems like some of this is kind of tearing you down.
Yeah, the you way know, you
talk about it.
I'm experimenting for the listeners to document, you know, what works and what doesn't work, and let people know. So, I would not really suggest doing a fat fast while CrossFitting. Probably a bad idea.
At least when you're fasting, you have less to throw up.
You're not going to be able to work out. You're going to pass out. It's going to be terrible.
Oh, I wish I could have seen you do it.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I just got to get this whole out of my mind. Like, this, the number and the scale. I'm just going to keep CrossFitting, keep eating paleo, and keep seeing results and be happy with it.
Now, I remember when I was trying to lose all that weight, and I was losing weight. For a couple of weeks, I plateaued. And it's like, no matter what I did, I could not get below this one number. And I basically had to kick everything into overdrive.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that liked to kill me. So God only knows what you're going through with CrossFitting and cream cheese eating. And
yeah. Yeah. Now I'm back to normal, and I'm going to increase the carbs a little bit, get a little starch in there so I can perform.
The macadamias, that makes sense because, my friend, after all that, you are nuts.
Yeah. Speaking of nuts, I saw an article posted on Facebook recently from author Rob Wolf about getting the nutritional macronutrient profile of eating insects.
Insects.
Right, and I couldn't read the entire article because apparently it was a PDF that was for sale, and I wasn't going to pay $19.95 to read this.
Now, anybody that's watched any of the survival shows on the Discovery Channel, what have you, be it Man vs. Wild, Man, Woman, Wild, Survivor Man, any of those, you've seen people eat insects. You've seen them just pick up raw, crunchy little proteins and eat them.
Right.
I mean, from ants all the way up to scorpions.
Right. So... And I mean, if you look at the anthropological records of it, humans evolved eating insects.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of cultures around the world still do it as one of their main staples.
Right.
Mean, like, some cultures have, like, locusts as one of their main staples of their diet.
Yes. So, I mean, it's... There's reason, you know, there's historical, you know, precedence that man was made to eat bugs.
Slimy yet satisfying.
Right. And, you know, I didn't read the article, but it got me thinking, like, I've never really had the whole stigmatism with bugs so much. And I was thinking about all the times that I have eaten bugs.
Now, I remember one time you were telling me about, I think it was a cricket or a grasshopper.
Grasshopper.
It was a grasshopper that got stuck in your apartment and was, for lack of a better term, bugging the crap out of you. And so instead of doing what most people would be like squish it and just get rid of it, you caught it and ate it.
Right.
You are going to annoy the crap out of me. You're about to be my next snack.
Yeah, just playing around, I had my window open in my bedroom while I was cleaning it and airing out, and three grasshoppers jump in my window, like big, huge, juicy grasshoppers. You know, and I'm just cleaning.
For adding the word juicy. Juicy.
They were big and juicy. So they were just jumping around and stuff, and, you know, I was busy cleaning, not really bothered by grasshoppers or insects that much, but I'm like, okay, guys, you got to get out of here now. I'm trying to clean my room. So you get out of here, or I'm going to eat you. And literally, two of the grasshoppers, you know, jump out of the room after I yell at them. And then one stays in there, and I'm like, well, I'm going to eat you. So, and this is before I was really paleo, so I caught the insect, and I made up a, what did I do? I think I killed him. I think I dipped him in some boiling hot oil or something to, like, kill him off. And then I removed his head, I think. I may not have. I don't remember. So I made a batter, and I battered and deep-fried him like a hot wing.
Oh, my Lord.
And he tasted like a hot wing.
Now, one
delicious.
Now, one thing that I know from... I don't even remember where I got this from. If you're ever going to eat a grasshopper or a cricket... You need to discard the head, and you need to discard the legs, because those legs got little barbs on it, and then get hung up in your throat.
Right. But if they're battered, it's not a big deal.
Well, I don't know that many people batter them.
Right.
Now, when you are eating insects, there are some things. There's pretty much, like, I think it's like three rules you want to look for. I mean, it's not just safe to pick up any dang thing off the ground and eat it. First, you want to... see how it's acting. If it's just lumbering around like it's not got a care in the world, it's just walking along, it's not trying to hide, it's not scurrying along the cracks or whatever. It's like got walking around like it's all the confidence that you wish you had. It's probably not a good idea to eat it. The reason it's got so confident is because it knows it's probably going to poison anything that tries to eat it. Two, the smell. If an insect's got a really bad smell, anything like that, also not safe to eat. And you also
just don't want to eat something smelly anyway.
No, and you want to watch out for like bright colors.
Red's a big indication. You know, a lot of the insects that you know you're familiar with, grubworms, crickets, grasshoppers,
things like that. Yeah, those are usually fine.
I've had barbecue flavored mealworms. Pretty good.
You want to avoid a lot of beetles, though. Beetles...
I'd be iffy about those.
Yeah, beetles are pretty iffy. I mean, those are usually the ones that'll go lumbering around like they don't care.
Locusts and cicadas here. Last time cicadas were here in Nashville, because we have a big cicada issue, some business in like downtown Nashville was doing, I think, barbecued cicadas.
Oh, God.
I meant to go get some.
I mean, out of all the insects I know, I know people eat those things on a regular, but I could never. They look like big, gigantic, ugly mutant aliens, flies with bright red eyes, and no.
So if we ever film our
Keep Mike Alive?
Our Keep Mike Alive TV special, would you be opposed to me feeding you insects in the woods?
I don't know. I think for that Keep Mike Alive, maybe that episode, if you're feeding me insects, I'd prefer to be simulating some kind of accident where I was having to wear a blindfold.
Right. See, that's the thing that always got me watching Fear Factor back in the day. They're eating, like, these insects this stuff, and I was like, nope, $5, sure, heck yeah. Never had a big issue eating most insects.
And it's funny, talking about eating insects at Fear Factor, did you ever see one of those celebrity episodes where they had Penn and Teller on there? Teller was the one that was actually competing. Penn was just there because you don't see Teller without Penn. You'll see Penn without Teller, but not the other way around. Right. Teller was competing in this, and it was round two, and they were giving this one chick, and I don't remember who she was. They were giving her a chance to not be eliminated because she couldn't complete round two, and round two was always the disgusting round.
Right.
And they're like, you know, and Joe Rogan's like, you know what? In this bucket, I have a few dozen Madagascar hissing cockroaches. If you can eat one of these, you get to go on to round three. This had nothing to do with anything else that happened to her, but he was giving her an out. And she was like, you know, all grossed out. Teller, meanwhile, walks up, reaches into the bucket, picks one up, and just starts crunching on it. For no reason, he had no part in this, and he's just crunching, and I thought he was going to go back for a second one.
Yes!
Nah, those dudes are hardcore.
Yes. they're actually hardcore libertarians. Like, I think it's Penn, the one that talks. Penn, yeah. He's very vocal and outspoken on, like, the libertarian.
He's very vocal and outspoken on everything.
I like him.
The most recent thing I've seen him on was, like, this celebrity, Rachel versus Guy celebrity cook-off.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's a contestant on that. I accidentally scratched my tattoo.
That's terrible. So our last sponsor today is Survival Gear Bags, run by Kelly Jondo up in, unfortunately, New York. Family owned and operated. He's got his little kids helping package up and send out the amazing survival gear bags. So stop by and check him out. He is the original Survival Punk sponsor.
And where can you find him?
SurvivalGearBags.com or head by Survival Punk and check on the banner in the right hand margin.
Awesome. Okay, I think it's time. Speaking of survival gear bags and other handy little gadgets like that, it is time for our survival gadget of the week. What do you got for us this week, James?
Not so much a survival gadget, but a new product that I bought. I put my money where my mouth is to support a company that I support. Now I support them financially. So I guess it was about a year or so ago, I interviewed Mountain Evan Chang from the Primal Professional about his new shoe. So I've got some weird foot issues, and I like sort of a minimalist shoe. I like the Vibram Five Fingers. Right now I'm wearing my Chuck Taylors because I like a nice flat shoe. The flatter I get my shoe, the lack of arch support. If my shoes have arch support in them, it just crushes my foot. Like I can't walk. Like it hurts me.
And it's more natural that way.
It is more natural.
Just ask Cody Lundeen or Mick Dodge.
Right. So there's, and you know, I work, I guess I have a sort of a blue collar job, right?
Right.
I'm in management and I'm required to wear, you know, business attire shoes.
You're blue collar bordering on white collar.
Yeah, yeah. So I have to wear, you know, nice dress up shoes to work, which are sort of the antithesis of the minimalist shoe.
Right.
You can't really get a natural shoe. If I show up to work with my Vibram Five Fingers on, they're just going to point me back out the door. No, no, James. Don't even think about it.
No.
So, Mountain had the same issue where he was in a corporate world and he wanted a minimalist shoe. He wanted to be sort of barefoot, but he was required to wear, you know, sort of suit and tie. So he set out through an Indiegogo campaign to invent a primal shoe,
okay.
A primal business shoe. So some of the features are, it looks like it has a nice heel on it, but that's like an illusion. It's just like molded and cut a certain way, and it's a completely flat business shoe with lots of like room for your toe to wiggle around. They're a little bit wider than a normal shoe,
mm-hmm.
So it's you know, gives your room like, it's almost like your foot is hidden inside of, you know, just a box, and like it feels like you're naturally walking around.
Fascinating.
I mean, it looks business professional and good, but it's sort of all fake and, you know.
You know, for a minute there, I was halfway expecting you to say it's like the shoes that Toph wore in Book 3 of the Avatar.
Oh, with the false bottom?
Well, yeah, with no bottoms. Oh, okay, yeah, there's a picture of them, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a nice, good business shoe, and they're comfy. So, head over to the Primal Professional and check out the Primal Professional, and I recommend it highly.
Now, are you going to be doing a full review on the site?
I will be doing a full review on the site shortly. I want to give it a couple more days of testing. I mean, I was telling everyone at work, because I went on my lunch break to pick them up at the UPS store, the FedEx store.
Mm-hmm.
It was like walking on kittens. Like, that's how comfortable they were.
Wow.
So, yeah, the Primal Professional, check them out.
All right, and stay tuned on survivalpunk.com for his full review and report on those.
All right, you got a celebrity invite?
Yes, I do. It's time for Mike's celebrity invite. My survival celebrity this week, his name is Rudy Reyes. He was on the show Ultimate Survival Alaska, a show that myself and my wife like to watch. His second season, he was on the military team. He's a Marine Forest Recon. He unfortunately had to leave the show early due to an injury. He'd climbed up a tree so he could see their landing zone, see the finish line. And then when he realized all these other teams were kind of closing in on him, he jumped out of the tree, and I can't remember if he just twisted his ankle or broke it. I'm getting the signal from our producer that, yes, he did break part of his leg jumping out of this tree. But his buddies, the other two members of his team, drug his butt to the finish line. And so they did get to complete that, which means that that team got to stay in the competition. Unfortunately, only two of the three got to stay in the competition. He had to go home early, so I don't know if he's out in the field or if he's just sitting at home or whatever, but Rudy Reyes, you have an open door, open-ended invitation to come on a Bible Punk podcast at any point in the future. I know you listen to us.
All right. Absolutely.
Well, it has been a great show this week. It's moved along at a relatively brisk pace, has it not?
Right, yeah.
Wow, it went longer than I thought it did.
Right, you were like, oh, this is going to be the shortest episode ever when we're doing show prep, and we're at a little over an hour.
I know. It has been awesome. It has been awesome. Well, I think it's time to wrap things up. Tune in next week, same time, same channel, for Survival Punk Podcast on survivalpunk.com. I'm Mike.
And I am James from ThrivalPunk.com.
And just remember, even if time is a factor, don't just go jumping out of trees. It's hard to survive when you can't walk.
And stuff.